Hi, Ankle Listener. This is your boy D-Lo One Stack, and I'm back with another exclusive story. And the story that I bring to you is about a young boy by the name of George Steine Jr., which was the youngest American ever to be put to death in an electric chair, and then his conviction being overturned. According to allthatinteresting.com, George Steine Jr. was just 14 years old when he was executed in South Carolina in 1944. It took 10 minutes to convict him and 70 years to exonerate him. The youngest person in the United States to ever be put to death in the electric chair was an African-American 14-year-old named by George Steine Jr. He was executed in the Deep South in 1944 in the midst of the Jim Crow era. George Steine Jr. lived in a segregated mill town of Okulu, South Carolina, where white people and black people were separated by railroad tracks. Steine family lived in a humble company house until they were forced to leave when the young boy was accused of killing two white girls. It took a jury of white men 10 minutes to find Steine guilty, and it would take 70 years before Steine was exonerated. That's just a small piece of the story that I wanted to talk to you guys about. But in March 44, Betty June Benicker, 11, and Mary Emma Thames, 7, were riding their bikes in South Carolina looking for flowers when they saw Steine and his young sister during their journey. They stopped to ask if they knew where to find May Pops, the yellow edible fruit of passion. That was reported the last time the girls were seen alive. Benicker and Thames, who were white, never made it home that day. Their disappearance promoted hundreds of residents, including Steine's father, to come together and search for the missing girls. It wasn't until the next day when their bodies were discovered in a soggy ditch. When Dr. Serbi Selly Bozar examined their bodies, there were no clear signs of struggle. Both the girls had met violent deaths involving multiple head injuries. Thames had a hole boring straight through her forehead into her skull, along with a 2-inch long cut above her eyebrow. Meanwhile, Benicker had suffered at least 7 blows to the head. It was later noted that the back of her skull was nothing but a mass of crushed bones. Bozar concluded that Benicker and Thames had wounds that were likely caused by a round instrument about the size of the hammer head. A rumor floated around town that the girls had made a stop at a prominent white family's home on the same day of their murder, but that was never confirmed, and police certainly didn't seem to be looking for a white killer. Clarendon County law enforcement officers learned from a witness that Benicker and Thames were seen talking to Steine. They went to his home. There, George Steine Jr. was promptly handcuffed, interrogated for hours in a small room without his parents, attorney, or any witness. Police claimed that Steine confessed to the murder, Benicker and Thames, after his plan to have sex with one of the girls failed. An officer named H.S. Newman wrote in a handwritten statement, "I arrested a boy by the name of George Steine. He then made a confession and told me where to find a piece of iron about 15 inches long. He said he put it in a ditch about 6 feet from the bikes." Newman refused to reveal where Steine was detained, as rumor of lynching spread throughout the town. Not even his parents knew where he was as his trial quickly approached. At the time, 14 years old was considered the age of responsibility, and Steine was believed to be responsible for the murder. About a month after the girl's death, George Steine Jr. trial began at Clarendon County Courthouse. Court-appointed attorney Charles Paulin did little to nothing to defend his client. During the 2-hour trial, Plotin failed to call witness to stand or present any evidence that would cast doubt on the prosecution of this case. The most significant piece of evidence presented against Steiny was the alleged confession, but there was no written record of the teen admitting to the murders. By the time of his trial, Steiny hadn't seen his parents in weeks, and they were too afraid of getting attacked by white mobs to come to the courthouse. So the 14-year-old was surrounded by strangers, up to 1,500 of them. Following a deliberation that took less than 10 minutes, the all-white jury found Steiny guilty of murder with no recommendation for mercy. On April 24, 1944, the teen was sentenced to die by electrocution. George Steiny Jr.'s execution was not without protest. In South Carolina, organizers from both white and black ministry unions petitioned Governor Olin Johnston to grant Steiny clemency based on his young age. Meanwhile, hundreds of letters and telegrams poured into the governor's office, begging him to show mercy to Steiny. Steiny supporters appealed with everything from the basic idea of a fairness to the concept of Christian justice, but in the end, none of it was enough to save Steiny. On June 16, 1944, George Steiny Jr. walked into the executing chamber at the South Carolina State Penitentiary in Columbia with the Bible tucked under his arm. Weighing only at just 95 pounds, he was dressed in a loose fitted striped jumpsuit, strapped into an adult-sized electric chair. He was so small that the state electrician struggled to adjust an electrocution to his right leg. A mask that was too big for him was placed over his face. Assistant captain asked Steiny if he had any last words. Steiny replied, "No, sir." The prison doctor prodded, "You don't want to say anything about what you did?" Again, Steiny replied, "No, sir." When officials turned on the switch, 2,400 volts surged through Steiny's body, causing the mask to slip off. His eyes were wide and teary, and saliva was emanating from his mouth for all the witnesses in the room to see. And two more joints of electricity, it was over. Steiny was pronounced dead shortly thereafter. In a span of just 83 days, the boy has been charged with murder, tried, convicted, and executed by the state. George Steiny's murder conviction was thrown out in 2014. His siblings claimed that his confession was coerced and that he had an alibi at this time of the murders. He was with his sister, Amy, watching the family's cow. They also noted that a man named Wilford Johnny Hunter, who claimed to be Steiny's cellmate, said that Steiny denied murdering Big Nigger and things. He said, "Johnny, I didn't do it. I didn't do it," Hunter said. He said, "Why would they kill me for something I didn't do?" After months of consideration, on December 17, 2014, Judge Carmen T. Mullen vacated Steiny's murder conviction, calling the death sentence a great and fundamental injustice. George Steiny Jr.'s siblings were overjoyed to learn that their brother was exonerated after 7 years, appreciating that they were able to live long enough to see it happen. "It was like a cloud just moved away," said Steiny's sister, Catherine Robinson. "When we got the news, we were sitting with friends. I threw my hands up and said, 'Thank you, Jesus. Someone has to be listening. It's what we wanted for all these years.'" This is your boy D-Lo 1000, One Stat, back with a very, very interesting story. I'll be back with you guys with some more. Hope you like the story. Things will get better. Thanks for talking with you guys.